Hi, welcome to Midnight in the Marshaverse. It's midnight, and this is the Marshaverse. This is part of the Marshaverse. This is the hub of the Marshaverse, where I come to charge up, get my juices flowing. But tonight we are going to chill. If you're a grown up adult and the kids are in bed and you need some chill out time, this is the perfect place to do it. I like to have a little nightcap, a little cannabis and cognac. And tonight's cannabis is a heavy hitters cartridge. I don't know what the strain is because I just hit them and then put them in a bowl. And then whenever I, you know, it's like potluck. I surprise myself every time. And this mod is Hamilton Company. I don't know what the name of the thing is. It ain't even coming on. And it's called the Stiletto. Watch this. Yeah. So right now it's heating up. And I'm going to take my first hit. If you're an adult and you're into this sort of thing and want to join me, please do. If not, go make a sandwich, grilled cheese and some tomato soup. Whatever it is that turns you on, just chill. Yeah, baby. Okay. All right, let's get this party started. We are also having a little cognac, and tonight we're going to have some douce or Deucey or whatever you want to call it, Jay-Z's brand, even though according to Essence magazine, he has sold half of his investment in the company. He still maintains a healthy enough share to be a freaking billionaire. So here's to giving billionaires some of your money. Join me if you like. A little cannabis, a little cognac, and get this party started. Okay, it's Juneteenth. The holiday where we celebrate not being told the war was over. Yay! And really and truly, if you want to know the truth, it's still not over. It's still people fighting the Civil War. I was watching some documentary. I like to watch documentaries, history documentaries, about the Klan and all that kind of stuff. And these people are still mad. At first, it's the Civil War, and then the Civil Rights Act. Anything with the word civil in it just pisses them off. And so they're ready to go to war if Trump don't win. And the only reason they like him is because he gives them permission to fight the Civil War again. And so it's just amazing how the privileged don't see their privilege. They have this weird sense of what is that really ain't. And they're stuck in that and going crazy. I did a series about how Black women are depicted in the media. The media is often the propaganda arm of white supremacy. It's one of them. Religion is another. We'll get into that at another time. As the world's leading sheologian, I am qualified to discuss this. I have my degree from the Warfield School of Comedy at MFU, which stands for Marsh Francine University. UMF works too. Anyway, I am the world's leading authority on sheology. And so we can talk about how the goddesses and women should be in charge because men have fucked it up a lot. But anyway, As a propaganda arm of white supremacy, we are used to hearing about stereotypes of minorities and how they are depicted, but everybody in a story is a stereotype, a trope, is a made up. They're not real. Even when you're doing a story about real people, it is still fictionalized. It is still the imagination of the people making the whatever it is, even if it's gleaned from historical sources. So in the movies, in TV, we know about the stereotypes of women, of Black women, of Mexican people, of Chinese people. But we don't think about the way they stereotype white men. White men are always depicted as the hero. You know, the good guys wear white hats. Even if there is a white man who is a villain, he is conquered by another white man who is more white man than apparently he is. And so when you have a movie, you have the hero, the lead, you have his dutiful wife, who is always stereotyped as either a dutiful, loving, submissive person, or just a screaming bitch. And usually the screaming bitch is either turned into the dutiful wife or disappears. So you have that character and his best friend, and usually a lot of times it's a gunkle, you know, and nobody ever mentions that he's a lifelong bachelor or why. The kids are always well-behaved, except when they're a little bratty, a little cranky or whatever, but they disappear at the right times, and they're stereotypical little children. And there are the Black people in the films, and they are always stereotyped as workers, servants, or pets, or both. Quite often, they're clueless, they're submissive, and happy to be in the service of the white people that they work with. Black women have always been characterized as either a mammy, the unattractive, gone with the wind, Hattie McDaniel, love y'all so much, more than I love my family, and asexual, and like I said, just dedicated to the people who branded her and bred her and sold her children and beat her and won't let her go and do whatever she wants and use her the way they want to. She's happy to be there. And Mammy is always asexual, because when you have a woman living in your home, if she is attractive, there's always the speculation that you might be intimate with her, which was most often the case in reality. In reality, mammies were often young, nubile, attractive women. Think Sally Hemings, and not large, unattractive women made to appear unattractive in film. That was not the reality, and so this character has become beloved to America because she is a mother figure, and she caused people all kind of pain when they took her off the pancake box. People still mad about that. you can't even give up a fake mammy. So, but mammy is always the dutiful mother figure. And then there's this sexy young Jezebel. Jezebels aren't always Black, but Black Jezebels are generally mixed race and have a tad more freedom. They often are in service of gentlemen, and they are also available at all times sexually, so that the burden for taking her is not on the man who takes her, but on her, she's just, she wants it. She's always ready for it. And she's, you know, independent, and you can't tame her and marry her and all that kind of stuff. Then there's the Sapphire. She came about in the 50s and 60s. She was given voice by Sapphire on the Amos and Andy show when she was mocked because she was such a threat. The angry black woman has been described as somebody who can emasculate men with a look. This is a fear that is totally unreasonable, but it's like the fear of vaginas with teeth. What is it about women that has you so terrified that you would make up these kinds of irrational fears and then act like it's true? And so this idea that black women have the power to emasculate men of any gender with a look fascinates me, because emasculation generally requires surgery. And so if she can do all of that just by going, then you got bigger problems, okay? And so we have these kind of images from the images we've been given, and we are comfortable with them. We expect them, and we believe them. In the 40s, there was a movie called Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House, starring Cary Grant. And it's all about this hapless, all-American British guy who just can't get it together, is always, you know, losing his job and whatnot, but he dreams of moving to the suburbs and raising his family leisurely. Can't get it done. He finds the house, still can't get it done. And at the near the end of the movie, it's like, okay, all is lost. We're not going to get it. This is the end of my dream. And I think we have a clip. Can we show it? Now, as we see, Gussie saves the day. Her intellectual property, she came up with the slogan that makes Mr. Blanding's dream come true. And he gratefully tells his wife to give her $10 a week, whatever, while he rakes in millions enough to buy his dream house, have his kids running around in there and his friends over, and Gussie still in the background working for him for that extra $10 for her idea. And nobody will say anything about that unless you point it out, because it is so normalized how we expect to see certain people and where their place. We live in a time where people are not staying in their place. And this is causing everybody a whole lot of trouble. Well, not the people who aren't staying in their place. Black women especially are not staying in our place. We have really internalized the Sapphire spirit, and we ain't doing that. And Sapphire spirit is the one that has black women who's starting to speak up in the 50s and 60s, starting to speak out, starting to raise their voices, to have opinions, to argue, to demand change. And those women represent a threat to the people whose own personal self-worth is based on you staying in your place. And we have police forces, we have whole societies, whole systems, school systems designed to keep certain people in their certain places. Well, that's not working anymore. And people are saying, if you ain't eating ham, you ain't eating wham, and you ain't using my idea unless you give me some money. This is turning everything around. And when you really think about what's causing all the trouble and the division in the country, that's pretty much it. you ain't in staying in your place. And it's just hard for people to realize that they can't persuade you to do that. The only way to do that is the only way it's always been done, and that's by force and coercion and trickery. And that's the time we're in now, where women have to go back to their place. Black people have to go back to their place. Immigrants, go back to their place. Everybody has to do the job that has been designated for them at birth. And we pretend like this is not the truth, but it is. And so when somebody breaks out of that, it's like, oh, she's up from the ghetto and now she's Oprah Winfrey. Okay, so this is a wonderful thing, because it don't usually happen that way, according to what the program is. And so by being aware of how they do these things, that it becomes very obvious what's going on now. And so that's my rant for the day. And before we go any further, I have to tell you, Breeze, what's our show brought to you by? Aunt Karen Suburban Seasonings. All kinds of wonderful foods and casseroles in a can for your enjoyment. And just in time for Juneteenth, Aunt Karen and her parent company, Dwight Food Company, introduces her new line of Negro seasonings, dishes for any occasion. Tastes just like a big black woman made you a plantation-style meal inspired by her ancestors and yours. What better way to celebrate the nation's history of keeping black people enslaved than white Aunt Karen's Negro seasoned chicken and watermelon souffle? Another all-American meal from our friends at Aunt Karen. I know you like that. Anyway, run out and get you some Aunt Karen's, because the food is not really tasty, but it's bland. So I think it's time to introduce my fellas this show, this Midnight in the Marshaverse, Me and the Boys show. These are my sons, Giggle and Squirm. No, that's not true. Giggle and Squirm are on Parliament's album. Anyway, my sons, my oldest son, and he's here. He's been working with me for the past almost 10 years at the opening and being a host on the shows and producing the Book of Marcia. And so I'm happy to have him here. Yes, my oldest son, Stephen. Hey, Stephen, how you doing?
Hey.
Hey, is it really Stephen?
It really is.
Oh, how are you? Hi. You're here this time.
I'm actually Squirm.
Oh, okay. Well, let me introduce Giggle, your brother. My baby boy, my problem child, my uncle upstairs. You know I love you madly. He's been with me just as long, only now he's with Lunel, so I have to share him. That's his work mama. Anyway, I'm here. I'm his weed mama, I guess, and pot, marsh cast mama. And he's here right now just sucking on a long brown thing. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to my baby boy, Skills Hudson.
The last part, but I'm sucking on the brown thing.
Hold it up.
But I'm just saying.
Hold it up, okay? You sucking on a long brown thing. Don't try to make a lie out of me just because you're embarrassed.
I was pulling on. Oh, yeah, that's going to make it sound even better.
No, I'm so glad you're both here. So you heard rant. You heard? Do you have any thing to say about the stereotypes and the depictions that you saw in that little clip, and what I had to say about it?
Yeah. Right. For one thing, it was very informative because it was, as you were saying it, it was stuff that like, that you'd be like, dang, it's been embedded into our minds that I didn't even really notice. You know what I'm saying? And the messaging got through. I was because like each one you was naming from the Jezebel to the Sapphire and how they would be like to get their messages across, and then you showed that clip at the end where the dude he sit up there and he seemed like he had hit a wall and his advertisement trying to find ideas, and then the mammy comes in with her positivity and energy and fixing food for the family and just saying something off the top of the dome, and that steals the idea. Like, wait a minute, make sure you give her $10 extra a week. And then you see the camera zoom out. I didn't even know they could zoom a camera out down back then like that. That zoom out was nice. And you see all the shit, people, the friends over, the big house, and like, dang.
And that's what those images are, what the conservatives miss. They miss those images because as they're projected, they can believe they're true. And because this is the way all America is being shown. And so this is the way it's supposed to be. And if you live in your little subdivision and you have nice things and all that kind of stuff, it makes sense to you. If you are indoctrinated as a person who doesn't have those things, that still makes sense. Even when you see your own people being exploited on screen, that woman was exploited on screen, and nobody, as a rule, felt victimized or offended. It was like, you know, well, that's just her lot in life. Of course, her ideas belong to him, especially since she don't know what she's saying. And that's how she had to say it. Every actress who may have auditioned had to read that line. They got the actress who said it the way they wanted it said. Now, other women, if you ain't eating what ham, you ain't eating wham. Or whatever. No, thanks. But she said it like she just thought of it and was happy to think of it. And that's what they wanted to show. And so it's harder to be manipulated by those images if you're aware that you are being manipulated. Steven?
Hi, Mom.
Hi, honey.
Hi.
What do you think?
Well, I have to tell you that knowing the points you were making, I was suddenly reminded of a fairly recent movie called The Help. That when I saw it in the movie theater, I didn't like it. I didn't like it, and I felt like but I couldn't put my finger on it, to be really honest with you. And, but I was not comfortable. And I just kept that to myself for a while because everybody was like, the help, the help, the help. And, boy, I didn't like it. And, so hearing you talk about what you're talking about now, as far as the media, the movies being the arm of the white supremacist. I mean, to me, The Help is a great example of that hasn't gone away. Blaringly. It's a blaring example. And I looked up what Viola Davis thought of that movie. And, you know, she had some choice things to say about it. She called it a racist cesspool and that she regrets being on that movie. So, you know, I think your points are really well taken.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, voice of God.
You're preaching to the choir. I had a whole bunch of mixed emotions watching that thing. I remember I used to watch a lot of documentaries about Black films back in the day and how we were represented. And the one thing that always stuck true was, like, say, for example, when Step and Fetch It were at their height of fame, Black people knew that that wasn't us. We just knew that whoever were doing it to make a living. And it kind of always stuck with me because I think that goes on now. Because there's still a particularly in the hip hop arena, it's a lot of cooning. It's a lot of cooning going on. But I think the majority, majority of Black people look at it and go like, "That's, we get it. You know, you're trying to make money, and white folks are clearly gonna they'll pay to see you with the tail." But that's not me. Like that's not me. And I think that's where the conundrum is, because at one point we do need to come together, because that's sort of what's representing all of us. And we're in a different world now that we can make those statements, and it can have a little bit more impact than they did back in the early days of cinema. But totally preaching to the choir.
I don't think that everybody liked it then. I don't think that everybody excused people for performing in certain ways because you were just making money. I think that's the story that is comfortable to promote. That's the narrative that is comfortable. But evidence that many people fought back against that. Many people refused to do this. Is why you don't know their names. Many people saw these kinds of things as selling out at the time. Butterfly McQueen famously regretted playing those roles. She said she didn't mind doing it the first time. But then when that was all she kept getting, and like we just saw Louise Beavers, I don't think, I think I looked it up. I saw a statistic that said she never played a character that wasn't a maid.
Oh my
and
goodness.
So in her career, she did hundreds of movies and always a maid. It's not that there's something wrong with being a maid. There's something wrong with being expected to be a maid. There's something wrong with being limited to that perception of who you are and can be. And for all of show business history, that's kind of the way that Black people have been seen and shown. But so many people not only refused, went around the system, found other ways. The reason why you have the things we have now is because there were Chitlin circuits and independent filmmakers and rebel playwrights and authors and people. I'm not doing that. And they didn't. We, again, hear so many stories about, well, they just needed to get paid. No, a lot of people refused to get paid. You know, a lot of people didn't take that tack. And there's a I think Paul Mooney was the one who said Hattie McDaniel's speech, where she said, "I could play a maid or and make $700 a week, or be a maid and make $7 a week," or something like that. But I think Paul said that was a PR hack written for her to say. Mm-hmm. Whether it is or not, the possibility remains that many of the things we know were purposely put into the narrative so that you would accept things that are not acceptable. And so the more you see, the less willing you are to accept, and the less willing you are to stay in your place and blindly obey, live like it's Jim Crow again. So, all that being said, what's your 2-minute rant? Who's going first?
Well, for some of y'all that might know or not know, I'm a very big sports fan. I watch all types of sports, even the crazy sports they got coming out now. Well, not coming out, but you see popping up on the timelines, Facebook, like the slapping championships, where you're seeing these people holding little things, so when they get slapped, they won't fall out. But my rant is about the NBA Finals this year. And you probably say, when is the NBA Finals? It's over. The champion was the Boston Celtics. But it was so boring this year. It was the boringest NBA Finals ever. I mean, ever. You know, and just recent memory, you know, it was between the Dallas Mavericks and Boston Celtics. Both teams, they got stars on each team, but it was no draw. There was no interest in, like, people talking about, hey, man, watch this. People were more talking about the midget fight that happened this weekend. Without midget, shout out to Javonte Davis, Tank. He rocked Frank Martin. But it just really burns my butt. I learned that saying from my big brother, sis. But it really burns my butt that it was just so boring, because each year, even if my team, and my team hasn't, shout out to Chicago Bulls, haven't been in the finals in years, over 15 years. And so, but I still will watch the NBA Finals. You know, whatever team would be in the NBA Finals, I always watched it each year. But this year was horrible.
Ibble.
It was just boring, Mom.
You know,
thank you, Mom.
I remember when the Bulls started. I think it was 1967. And the first team was Norm Van Leer, Jerry Sloan, who else? Bobby Weiss. Was Chet Walker and Bob Love on that team? Anyway,
Bob Love.
I remember when it started. Okay, so, well, we'll go in order. Steve N.
Hello.
Hello, rant on.
Before I rant on, I would just like to say that I did teach skills, burn my butt. And part of that reason was because I was inspired by the amount of times he butt dialed me this week. But that's a whole different story. So my rant is this. How come people look so surprised when they see people coming out of the elevator? What? How can this be? You know what an elevator is. You know how an elevator works, and you know that people use them. So why are you all the way at the doors waiting for the elevator to come in, and then when the elevator door opens and I try to get out, you look like you can't believe I'm standing there. I want to kill these people. Like, and then these same people turn around and do this and then get mad when people do it to them. How can you put a stroller right at the front of my shins when I'm trying to get out and then have the gall to be offended when people do that to you? Do we not need a sign that says, hey, bitch, back up on the elevator? I mean, don't we need this? Oh my, I can't tell you how many almost fist fights I've had when I have been at the front of the elevator and I'm about to go out and somebody is literally standing on the metal grate, the threshold between the hallway and the elevator opening. And then they get mad at me. You're mad at me? How are you mad at me? How are you mad at me? So I was trying to get out of this elevator and the guy came in and what do you call it? He body checked me. Oh yeah. My God. I was so mad. I was like, fuck yeah. He's like, no, fuck you. And now we're in the middle of the elevator and then the doors are closing and we're still like, no, fuck you. Fuck you. I've never been so mad in my life. I don't think so.
Downstairs and you get into your cars and he tries to cut you off. on the turn, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Same guy. Same guy.
I know. Breeze.
I do not like it. Like it usually happens on singing shows or singing competitions when it's usually a really, 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 like a young white girl, maybe teens or pre-teens. And she has a very distinctive voice that is almost reminiscent of a jazz singer. And it just always annoys me when they're like, she sounds just like an old black lady. It annoys me because I'm like, you know who else sounds like an old black lady? Old black ladies. Like there's still like so many other artists out there. Like why? And I remember there was this one news story at her blog, was younger and I can't deny the talent. This young white girl had this very distinctive voice. And everybody was saying how she sounded exactly like Nina Simone. And I remember one of the comments was like, wow, I guess this Nina woman is jealous that she's this little girl taking over her place. And it's because the kids don't know the history and it's just the whitewashing that annoys me. And like as a screenwriter, I'm bumping my head into that all the time of my work being seen through this white gaze. And it just, like, as a person of color, as a person in several minorities, it's just like, I would really like for you guys to like read my work and my experience and not have to go through the Charlize Theron filter. Despite the fact I love Charlize Theron, and I always said if I had an autobiography, I wanted her to play me, because I thought that would be kind of funny. But it really annoys me, the white gaze that goes on in the entertainment industry. And then, and I guess on the other flip side of that, not to get too into the Hollywood business, when we adopt the stereotypes ourselves in hopes of it being funny, also irritates the shit out of me too.
Then what about, do you remember the Fifth Dimension?
Yes.
They were accused of doing the opposite, or doing the same thing of doing white music and not doing soul black music. And does that equate? Is there a similarity there when you have, and I guess it also extends to Beyonce doing country, you know? Are these spaces and these styles and these things, are they really proprietary racially or according to a group, or are they American things that we all are influenced by?
I am not a part of the Beehive whatsoever. But I have listened to all of Cowboy Carter by Beyonce several times. It is an amazing album. I think it's very true that she even said it herself, this is not a country album, this is a Beyonce album. And if you listen to it, it's a Beyonce album. It's maybe like two or three actual country songs. The rest of it is kind of house and pussy pop music. But she also blends a lot of genres. Like she does, there's like country elements, there's rockabilly elements, there's rock elements, there's adult contemporary elements. So I think what she's doing, which is kind of revolutionary, because not too many people have the gumption to do it or the fan base to pull it off, is to make an album that truly breaks all boundaries. And I think the people who like appreciate Beyonce, a really thumbs up. Like this is like I'm looking forward to more artists doing something similar. I do think people who are
Andre 3000 playing the flute.
Like I love shit like that. I listened to that album several times. So I like the expansion. And I think the people who get the most pullback are the ones that are waiting for America to be great again. And I am part of the group that is looking to make America better.
I like Michael McDonald because I like Michael McDonald. I like Steely Dan because I like Steely Dan. I love Phoebe Snow because I love Phoebe Snow. because they sing the kind of music I like. Mm-hmm. I don't care where they came from, you know, I don't care about that. They make the kind of music I like, and it when there's when it's okay for that. But that's the whole thing about rock and roll, black music, whatever, from the beginning, black movies. People have always gravitated to it. I was watching the Ken Burns jazz series, and of course we know it was born in black people, but it was embraced by everybody. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the influencers were not black.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to claim it. Black people took it back, but still, you know, it was acknowledged that Louis Armstrong is like the granddaddy, and that before the Duke Ellingtons, and all of the heroes and the blues and the rhythms and all that kind of stuff that came over on slave ships and whatnot. When does it get to be not Eminem, Caitlin Clark coming into the black space and black audiences going into a white space? It's just people doing the thing they do because it's the thing, it's the American thing to do.
Wait a minute, look, my apologies, because I just thought it was y'all that was giving y'all opinion on that. Got lost. My bad.
So you weren't listening, is that what you're saying?
Let me say my I'm on this pina colada tonight.
Uh-huh. And
so after my rant, I was chilling.
Oh, okay.
But look, I do remember.
You know what? I was tired of my lady. We've been together too long. Like in a worn-out recording of a favorite song. So while she lay there sleeping, I read the paper in bed. And in the personal column, there was a letter I read. If you like pina colada,
and get it hot in the rain.
If you're not into yoga, if you have half a brain. If you like to pina colada at night, in the dunes on the cape, I know
the thing
to look for. Write to me and escape.
One more time.
Pina colada. Happy Juneteenth, everybody.
Time for the question of the week. And this question comes from me as an observer of men. I have spent most of my life working among men and observing men in their natural habitats, where they like to gather together and do man things. And having been granted one of the boy status on more than one occasion, I feel comfortable asking this question to you guys. Okay. Would you rather have a large penis or a full head of hair?
I would probably say a full head of hair because I already have a large penis. That would be me.
You have to have one or the other. You can't have both.
So which would you rather have?
So Breeze, which one would you rather have? You have to have one or the other.
Oh, the big dick. I can just get a piece. I can get a piece. I've been watching that TV show, L.A. Hair. They make pieces really for everybody. So, yeah, big dick. Can't put a piece on the dick.
Well, but you can put a dick on a piece.
Who doesn't have a penis? I have a drawer full of penises. You can get them in any size you want to.
Yeah.
No big deal. skill.
For me, is the hair. Bring on all the hair and all the hair products. Look, for me, I'm going to tell you, and if y'all was to say like it would happen right now, I've already had my big dick days. So I need the hair. Give me the hair. Give me the hair. Okay. Please give me the hair.
Well, speaking as someone who has both, if I had to choose...
You know, I should challenge you guys to prove it.
What? Wait a minute. I thought this was on StreamYard. Is this OnlyFans?
And I'm a little under the weather, so
you have to prove it on camera. But somebody should have to be able to check it out and see if y'all telling the truth.
I can't. It's doing a hedgehog thing right now until my immune system comes back.
It's what?
It's doing a hedgehog thing, but it's kind of like this hot sauce bottle. It's like, think of this. It's like that.
You got a stubby little...
It's all about the girth and not the length.
Okay. But I'm interested in the you know, skinny part that ballooned into the larger part.
You see this? In
my life.
You see this, Ma?
You got a long, thin, orange
penis. They used to call me bungee cord.
Trying to laugh.
Oh my god.
Okay.
I would choose hair.
Well, as one who doesn't have a penis at all, like I said. You don't really need one.
Hey, Mom.
In Mom, honor of Gay Pride Month, I just want to say for all the lesbians in the world, we do just fine. Sans penis, we do just fine. So I wouldn't care about hair or penile enhancement.
Yes, so I would like to say to all of your viewers that this evening I treated myself to a couple of hours of a documentary on Netflix called Outstanding, which features our mother, the one and only Marcia Warfield, who is one of the ones that they paid a lot of attention to and got used on this documentary. You saw a lot of her stand-up, more than others, and there's a reason for it. And the honesty, Mom, that you showed and the things that you said, especially you got to hear the bullet quote. You got to hear her talk about what a bullets. You'll know what I mean when you watch it. I have to say I shed a tear over that. And I love you and I appreciate. And I appreciate's not a strong enough word, but I honor you for your representation of our people, of our brothers and sisters in the LGBTQIA community. And I just want you to know how honored I am to be your friend. And the things that you said will touch a lot of lives and make people reflect. I love you.
I love you too. And you were there that night.
I was.
You were there that night. It was overwhelming. I don't know if you, I haven't seen the documentary, so I don't know. But I don't know if anybody could really capture what happened on that stage when everybody came out. And there was this huge gathering of people, underrepresented people, standing on the stage. And a huge, huge audience of people applauding and standing up and cheering. It would talk about overwhelming, bringing the tear to your eye. And I stood there and I looked around and Wanda was standing next to me. And I looked at her and she was like, it was so much to take in. And as one of the producers, I know that moment had to be just amazing you know, the and I've told like Melissa Rausch and Night Court and other people to be able to come up with a concept in your head. You know, you're just sitting around and you think of something, and then to stand in reality and see it as a thing is probably the most amazing thing you can have as a performer. It's just, it didn't exist until you thought of it. And now here we are standing in it. And
let me,
overwhelmed in that moment. And I hugged her and said, you deserve all this. Take it all in. You did this. And Wanda has been such a friend to me in my comeback to the stage, not just as LGBT lesbian, but as a woman, as a Black woman, as a friend, as a comedian, as a person. She was there. She's been there. She's always given me opportunities. And with her and Kim Whitley and Adele Gibbons and so many other, Sherry Shepherd, that just who've been there, all of my comedy sisters. I got no beef with them at all. And I revere them, and I revere my LGBTQIA people and everybody. Everybody, all of the people, you know, everybody ain't a lima bean. And so there are so many people who I owe so much to. And I just wish the world could see itself the way I see it could be, should be, and mostly is. And if there's one thing I want to do in whatever time I have left on this planet, it's to show people that no matter what it is, how bad it seems, it ain't as bad as all that. We have the technology. We have everything we need to have everything we want. And so I appreciate you, Stephen, for saying that. And I appreciate you, Skills, and Breeze, for thinking it and co-signing it.
Mm-hmm.
I love you guys, and thank you guys for being here. And I hope that everybody who is chilling with us and watching, I hope you had a laugh and a little fun, and get to have a good night's sleep and wake up tomorrow in a better day. I love you. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Little people.
All
right.
Bye-bye.
In the recording.
You got to leave that bye-bye in. Bye-bye.
She got a way, no one can do it like that. Her own style, no one can wear that hat. Hey, don't you know that the queen is back? She